Chapter 13. Honor Guard. The Tears Behind Our Glasses. Kalamazoo Public Safety Honor Guard. Pride is a personal commitment. It is a matter of attitude that separates excellence from mediocrity. William Blake. In January of 1992, I was chosen to be part of the only specialty unit that I would remain on for my entire career. It was an honor to serve with some of the most dedicated and committed officers in my life. The Honor Guard officers I served with over the years held our profession in the highest position of honor possible. We had an obligation to honor not only the fallen officer, but also the family, friends, and co-workers of the fallen. Our commitment was to ensure that the proper police and military honors were endowed to the fallen and their family to leave a lasting impression of a time-honored service for the fallen officer. No other duty throughout my career would see such levels of anguish, pride, emotion, distress, and fellowship than that of a Kalamazoo Honor Guard officer. Our Honor Guard team would receive notification via the LEAN system of any officer involved line-of-duty death in the state of Michigan. We would travel throughout the state representing Kalamazoo Public Safety at all in-the-line-of-duty deaths. In many cases, an agency would request that our Honor Guard be the primary representing Honor Guard to render all police funeral duties. Typically in these cases, the requesting agency didn't have an Honor Guard of their own and wanted to ensure the best possible police funeral for the family of the fallen. We were well-versed in casket guard detail, changing of the guard, rendering the final salute, organizing the ranks of visiting officers, providing a color guard detail, conducting the flag folding ceremony at the graveyard, presenting the flag to the chief of police and sometimes the family, including the final shotgun salute that replicated the military 21-gun salute for the fallen, and taps. At the end of the ceremony, we made it our own tradition to present to the family the empty 12-gauge shell casings fired during the 3-round volley of fire. To enhance the effect of the shotgun blasts, we used blank round cartridges in our silver Winchester shotguns to increase the sound of the blast and the smoke upon firing. We wanted to be impressive. Before any ceremony or funeral service, our team of officers would go through a period of scrutinizing each other using lint brushes to ensure no lint, thread, or particle was on our uniform. Each piece of equipment had to match and be highly polished. Boots were spit-shined, laces were a clean white, and badges and collar brass were fingerprint-free. Absolute perfection is what we were striving for. Many times this period of self-scrutiny would result in a barrage of constant jokes and personal attacks on each other. It helped lighten the mood of the seriousness of our situation and helped us each cope with the emotional trauma of death that surrounded the event. We would arrive early at any event to allow time to practice each movement or technique. "Go through it again, again, and again," our commanders would insist. A funeral must be flawless when we were on stage with an audience. First, a recon of the area to conduct the movements would be in order. This meant meeting with the funeral home directors to see where the body and flowers would be placed. We had to know if it was an open or closed casket and how long the visitation would last before the funeral would begin. Practice of the casket guard techniques and changing of the guard took place. Flag folding practice, final salute, final shotgun salute, playing of taps, all of these moving parts were practiced and practiced before the funeral would begin. Sometimes, though, practice time was limited, so you had to be focused on your A game, ready to go at any moment. We would also meet with the family member who seemed to be organizing the event with a funeral home director. Our job was to make the funeral perfect for them. We were there for the family, and our performance must be perfect. Being perfect wasn't always that easy for me. As a night shift officer, an honor guard call-up could be happening the very next day. Yes, that meant no sleep for Officer Todd. I would take advantage of the drive to wherever we were going to get in a small nap in a car full of loud-talking, wide-awake cops who enjoyed joking around and badgering one another. I could sleep right through it all. Our uniform consisted of a more dressed-up version of our normal Class A uniform. Highly shined combat boots with white laces to match our white gloves and neck ascots. A navy blue campaign-style hat, specialty badges, unit award, name tag, and leather jacket for cold weather events. There was no rank in the honor guard. Everyone needed to look the same. Uniformity was key. The funerals all seemed to be the same to me. The mood was a somber state of sadness for all in the line of duty deaths. We would see the masses of uniformed officers show up to file into ranks before entering the church or other large building. The other honor guard units from around the state were almost always present, and each unit lined up near the front of the church with its colors posted at the entryway. As the funeral would begin, the bagpipes would play, and the family would make its way into the church first. "Detail, present arms!" The hand salute was rendered, flags were lowered, and weapons adjusted to a salute as the family of the fallen made its way into the church. Once the family members and civilians had entered the church, the rank and file of officers would follow. Entering the church, all officers, each in turn, would remove their headgear, place their hats over their hearts, and make their way past the casket of the fallen officer as pass and review was conducted. It gave each officer a moment of silence to him or herself and a chance to say goodbye to the fallen comrade. Never was a dry eye present, and faces were somber as each officer took his or her place among the ranks and then to a seat. As I would make my way past the fallen officer, I would ask, "Will I be next? Will I be the next funeral? Will they all come to see my body? What will my family do? The families of the fallen must feel so empty, so helpless. Which one of us will be the next to die?" It was a powerful reminder that our chosen profession can become deadly. However, there was a sense of calm, knowing that my brothers and sisters in blue, brown, green, or Canadian red would be there to give me and my family the proper goodbye if that day ever came. What is so wonderful about Kalamazoo Public Safety is that our honor guard performs every funeral that a family requests for our own. Past or present public safety officers are all given that final respect by the department, the city, and the community they swore to protect. Often we would conduct funerals for retirees from years gone by. Only pictures in a church lobby or in a funeral home would be all that reminded those in attendance of the proud heritage the passing officer had lived. It was a pleasant reminder to me that even after my retirement and into my old age, the Kalamazoo Honor Guard would be there to give us the final respect we earned and deserved as public safety officers of Kalamazoo. It is comforting to know that my brothers in blue will see me off. I love them for that. It's okay to die. Do you believe in God? This is a question we all ask ourselves, I'm sure, at some point during life. How about near-death experiences? Life after death? Heaven? Hell? The supernatural, for that matter? Perhaps it could be blamed on my lack of sleep from working the night before a funeral, but I truly believe I did have an experience with the afterlife. Officer Scott Flahive of the Grand Haven, Michigan Police Department was murdered in the line of duty on December 13, 1994. The Kalamazoo Honor Guard attended the event, like many others from around the state, but on this day I would find myself in a situation I've only described to my family and never revealed to anyone else. At the time, I felt this moment was meant for only my eyes and my mind. It was intended for me to hold in a special place within my heart. Since that time, I feel that perhaps if I shared my experience, that others might find peace from it. It was a cold December morning in 1994 when our honor guard team drove to Grand Haven to attend Scott Flahive's funeral. The day was especially cold, with a cold rain and temperatures hovering just above freezing. Our team provided a color guard detail and made our way from the location of the funeral service to the graveyard where Officer Flahive would be laid to rest. As the hundreds of patrol cars found their parking spots and the bagpipes played, the ranks of officers formed at the gravesite and were all called to attention as the body of Officer Flahive was removed from the hearse. The flag-draped coffin was slowly pulled out and the commands were given. Detail! Attention! Present arms! While standing at attention and holding my salute, I was shocked at how the drizzle and rainy December day simply stood still for just a moment. I was happy the rain had finally stopped for the ceremony and was slowly being warmed by the sun that barely made its way through the parting clouds above. I remember that the sun felt so good at that moment, because we were all shivering from standing outside for so long and getting completely soaked in rain. It was the type of wet cold that goes right through you at that temperature. Why the hell is someone laughing? As the sun warmed my face, I could hear laughter coming from the ranks to my left. I was in disbelief that someone would actually be laughing, not paying attention during such a somber moment, and completely lacking self-discipline and respect for the fallen officer. The laughing continued, and then I could see movement to my left. I was trying to look out of the corner of my left eye without moving my head to see what idiot was creating all the commotion. I finally had to do it. I slowly turned my head while maintaining my hand salute and saw not an officer out of order, but the spirit of what I believe in my heart to be that of Officer Scott Flahive. It was a being, a vision, I don't know what, but it was clear that I was having a spiritual moment. As I looked to my left, I saw the body of a man dressed in a white flowing gown floating toward me and laughing. Yes, laughing. His hair was as blonde as the sun, and he floated in and among the officers who stood at attention within the ranks, passing through them and around them in a fast manner and just laughing. I saw the spirit moving in my direction, and he simply flew past me and vanished in the ranks to my right. I thought, does anybody else see this? I was looking around and nobody was reacting. The feeling that immediately followed the passing of what I believe was the spirit of Scott Flahive was an overwhelming sense of calm and happiness. I simply thought to myself, it's okay to die. This is the only feeling I can explain. I just knew that it was okay to die. I can still see myself smiling as the spirit passed by me and the sun warmed my face. I have no other way to explain the situation to myself, and I kept it a secret. At first I thought I should tell someone, but then I thought, no, this was meant for me. But as the years passed, I felt more compelled to reveal what I had seen. I told only my mom, dad, and two sisters about this. I hope that by revealing this special moment, perhaps it will help to bring peace and calm to others. I never feared death after this moment in my life. Officer Scott Flahive was shot and killed after he stopped a vehicle that contained two recently escaped criminals. As Officer Flahive approached the car, one of the suspects, who was lying in the back seat, shot through the door with a .30-06 rifle, striking Flahive and killing him instantly. The suspects turned themselves in, and the shooter was sentenced to multiple life sentences. The accomplices were sentenced to 10 and 15 years. Officer Flahive had been with the agency for 4 years and was survived by his parents and sister. When my students are killed, I die a little too. Our lives are filled with the good times and bad, but for me, as a police officer, my worst experiences have been the deaths of my friends on the force, and as a police academy trainer, the deaths of my students. Both of these nightmares came true for me, and I shall never forget them. The loss of my brothers rips my heart out of my chest and leaves a scar so deep nothing can ever heal it. The feeling comes back every year on the dates of their deaths, or randomly at any time of the day, or for no reason at all. It never gets easy to deal with, and the tears still continue to flow. I force myself to never forget them. Two of my past academy students died less than a month apart and less than 1 year from graduating from the Kalamazoo Valley Community College Police Academy, Owen Fisher and Scott Beierstedt. I consider all of my students as family, my everything, my brothers, my sisters, and my children. Losing one to death is heartbreaking, especially as their trainer, their mentor, their drill sergeant. I would give my life for any of these people, just as they would for me. You will never be forgotten. Officer Owen Fisher, Flint, Michigan Police Department. Owen Fisher had graduated from the KVCC 65th Academy and was clearly among the best in his class. Eager to join the ranks of cops around the state, Owen was hired soon after graduation by the Flint, Michigan Police Department. Officer Fisher was killed in the line of duty on July 16, 2005. He had been a police officer for only 4 months and would become the 10th Flint police officer killed in the line of duty. This was my first student killed in the line of duty. Many of his classmates were at the funeral. Once the funeral was over and we were all making our way back to our patrol cars for the ride back to Kalamazoo, I spotted a group of his classmates huddled around each other. Accompanied by PSO Paul Bianco, a fellow Honor Guard officer and my teaching partner and fellow drill sergeant at the academy, we both knew, without saying a word, what we had to do. Paul and I walked toward our group of past students, and we all simply embraced each other in a group hug and just let the tears flow. There's nothing we can do or say to help the pain. However, Paul and I knew we had to be strong. As our tears were wiped away, we did our best to give some words of encouragement to our students. For to them, we are always their drill sergeants, a source of wisdom and strength. On this day, though, we were one, joined together by the strength of each other's presence in the graveyard. I can't remember what I told my troops, but I hope it helped give them some peace. Officer Owen Fisher was killed in an automobile accident when his patrol car was involved in a collision with a second patrol car during a vehicle pursuit. The collision also caused the patrol cars to collide into a house. Officers from the Flint Police Department and Michigan State Police continued the pursuit and apprehended the suspect a short time later. The suspect was convicted and sentenced to serve 3 to 15 years for first-degree fleeing and eluding, second-degree fleeing and eluding, and assault with intent to do great bodily harm. Officer Fisher had served with the Flint Police Department for only 4 months. He was survived by his fiancée, parents, sister, and grandmother. Officer Scott Beierstedt, Mattawan, Michigan Police Department. 10 days after Officer Fisher was killed, Officer Scott Beierstedt of the Mattawan, Michigan Police Department was killed in the line of duty. Yes, another student killed, dead, gone. The death of Owen was like a knife to my heart through my chest. Scott's death was a knife through my spine into the back of my heart. I felt completely dead inside. Like Owen, Scott had been a police officer for only 4 months and had graduated from the KVCC Academy. Within 2 weeks of being hired by Mattawan, he would be killed in the line of duty. Scott is the only Mattawan police officer ever killed in the line of duty. Both Owen and Scott were in the field training phase of their careers. They never had a chance to do their jobs. Officer Scott Beierstedt succumbed to injuries sustained when his patrol car crashed during a vehicle pursuit at approximately 9 p.m. He and his training officer were pursuing a vehicle after trying to stop the driver for reckless driving. The patrol car left the roadway and struck a tree as it rounded an S-curve. Both officers were transported to Bronson Methodist Hospital, where Officer Beierstedt died. He wasn't wearing his seatbelt at the time of the accident. The vehicle they were pursuing fled the scene. The driver was arrested on August 8, 2005. He was convicted in Van Buren County on December 14, 2005, of one count of fleeing and eluding resulting in death. On January 6, 2006, he was sentenced to 5 to 25 years in prison. Officer Beierstedt had served as a part-time officer for the agency for only 2 weeks and had previously served with the Cassopolis Police Department for 4 months. Scott was killed just 8 miles from where I live. There is a huge maple tree alongside the road that still stands where he crashed. On this tree is a plaque in his memory. Each July I make a trip out to this tree and hang a new American flag above his plaque. I guess I just can't let Scott go. You will never be forgotten. The worst of days. Take Baker 22 off the watch. April 18, 2011 was by far the most tragic day in Kalamazoo public safety history. It was on this day that Kalamazoo lost its first officer to an in-the-line-of-duty death. Killed in the line of duty does not do him justice. PSO Eric Zapata was murdered in the line of duty. Not a student this time, but a partner. My brother, my coworker, my friend. And yes, even one of my new kids. I was one of PSO Zapata's field training officers when he first started in Kalamazoo 10 years earlier. I remember him with some of the fondest memories. In particular, Eric was full of laughter, and that laughter spilled over to everyone he met. Of the many great times we had together, I will never forget two of those moments, and I cherish them with all my heart. I have not previously shared either with many others, but now it is time to share his love of life and laughter with the world. When Eric was hired, I thought to myself, "Great, we finally hired a Latino officer who can speak Spanish for me when I need an interpreter." Minority officers are a jewel for Kalamazoo DPS. We are fortunate in Kalamazoo to have a department that is pretty well represented by minorities and aligned very closely to the diversity of our community. For a relatively small department in a mid-sized American city, our agency is quite diversified in the makeup of our officers. Black, white, Latino, Indian, Middle Eastern, gay, straight, Asian. The diversity in our ranks matches the diverse makeup of our nation, helps to strengthen ethnic bonds, and promotes respect for the differences of others. So here was this new Latino officer, Eric Emiliano Zapata. When I told Eric how thrilled I was that we finally hired another officer who could speak Spanish, he began to laugh at me, and with his huge smile he said, "Yeah, I'm a Mexican, but I don't know any Spanish." "What the hell?" I said. "You can't speak Spanish?" We both about pissed our pants laughing as we pulled out of the station. Another classic PSO Zapata moment came while we were working overtime for party patrol. I had been assigned to drive the paddy wagon around the city, pick up arrests from officers, and then transport the suspects to jail. Eric called out that he was in foot pursuit after a suspect. Shortly thereafter, as officers were responding en masse to assist him in the chase, Eric called out of breath, that he had caught the suspect and had him in custody. I wheeled the paddy wagon through a nearby intersection, screeched to a halt, and was the first officer to his scene. What a sight to behold. Eric had his male suspect in handcuffs and lying face down on the sidewalk. Eric was standing over the handcuffed lad, hand on hip, with one foot on the guy's back. He was inhaling a cigarette as fast as he could and smiling as I pulled up. He looked like a scene out of a movie. "Got him," Eric yelled out to me, smoking and laughing. I never let Eric forget that day. It was clearly one of the funniest sights I'd ever seen. Around 11 at night on April 18th, 2011, I was home in bed, off duty, of course, when the phone rang. It was my best friend and the mayor of Kalamazoo, Bobby Hopewell. When I looked at my phone and saw his name, I thought to myself, "This is odd. It's a weekday. Why would Bobby be calling this late?" I answered the phone, and I could tell something was terribly wrong. Bobby had a broken and quiet voice, and he asked, "Did you hear about what happened tonight?" I had no idea what was going on. "There was a shooting, and an officer has been killed." "What? Who?" "Eric Zapata was killed." I had no words. I told Bobby in a broken voice, through tears streaming down my face. "Okay, thanks. I'll call you later." I hung up. As I lay back in bed, memories were racing through my mind. What was I to do? I felt helpless, but there was nothing I could do. I rolled over on my side and just wept. I had to be up by 5:45 the next morning and to work by 7. Someone called me from the honor guard, and to this day I don't remember who, but they told me to report to the hospital in Lansing as soon as I got to work in the morning. I was to change into my honor guard uniform, and I was to go be with Eric's body during the autopsy. I quickly snapped myself back to reality and slept the best I could. I was up early, only 3 hours later, and went for a run in the early morning hours to clear my mind. When I entered Station 2, I still had no details of the shooting. All I knew was that I had to get to the hospital in Lansing and guard Eric's body. We had a standing order that Eric wasn't to be left alone at any moment until the funeral was complete and he was buried. I walked downstairs to the locker room of the station around shift change as other officers were preparing for duty. Nobody spoke, and I shut off the radio that was playing. I was just pissed, and I wanted silence. One other officer was changing clothes behind me and said, "I can't believe this happened. This isn't supposed to happen. They aren't really supposed to kill us." I went off on him. "What the fuck fantasy world are you living in? It's a fucking war out there. You better get that through your goddamn head." Obviously, he was still in disbelief that Eric was dead. I don't feel bad for yelling at him, though. I hope he realizes that it could be any of us, cold and dead, fucking dead. I changed and left the station and headed to Lansing. When I arrived at the hospital, I was directed to the morgue section, where I was confronted with a vision that has burned into my mind. There lay Eric, with only his uniform pants on, dark blue with a light blue stripe. I stopped and walked to my partner, lying on this cold metal table. My friend was gone, and I knew he was gone. But I didn't realize the magnitude of emotion that was building up inside me. I could hardly see. I felt my vision getting fuzzy as the tears welled up in my eyes. I slowly reached out to Eric and felt his cold arm. I held his arm in my hand with a tight grip. I simply stared at him as a hospital staff member walked up to me. "Just a minute, please," I said. "I need a moment." I just stared at Eric, looking at him up and down. The injury to his face, head, and chest was terrible. I cannot describe how much damage the high-powered assault rifle rounds did to his head, face, and chest. The destruction was beyond words, and I feel it would be inappropriate for me to describe the damage I witnessed. Within a few minutes after I arrived, the autopsy of Eric's body began. I stayed away and simply sat in a chair and stared at the hospital staff as they performed the autopsy procedures. I kept my tears inside and could feel the emotion building up again. I would not allow myself to show weakness in front of the hospital staff. I needed to be strong, KDPS strong, for Eric right then. During an autopsy, for those who have never seen one, the body is essentially taken apart and examined. The skull is cut in half and the brain is exposed. Ribs are sawn and organs examined in detail. I would glance over only once in a while to see the procedure. To my comfort, a former coworker of mine arrived at the hospital. Julie Yunker, the director of the police academy at Grand Valley State University, just showed up. I always considered Julie my other sister, and seeing her was such a relief to me. "Thank you, Julie girl. I love you so much." We sat and talked and tried to change the subject away from the tragedy to our times together at KDPS and at the police academy. Julie was retired from KDPS, and she has such a high level of commitment and dedication to our public safety family. Julie told me that she had heard I was going to be with Eric's body, and she didn't want me to be alone. Julie is the best. Once the numbness of the situation had set in, and my emotions were back in check, I became inquisitive as to exactly how Eric had died. I only knew a few details of the situation, and had no idea what really took place earlier in the night during the shootout with police. The doctor performing the autopsy explained to me that Eric was killed by the first round fired that struck him in the chest, ripped through his bulletproof vest, and impacted his heart and lungs. He told me that Eric was killed instantly, probably before he even hit the ground. Of course, my attention was drawn to the massive head wound Eric sustained. The doctor reiterated to me that Eric was already dead when the suspect fired the second round into Eric's head at close range, before turning the gun on himself and committing suicide. This gave me some comfort, as it was normal for me to think of how this situation could have been avoided, but you know it could have been any of us that night. Eric ran toward the sound of the guns to back up a fellow officer involved in a running gun battle with the suspect. Without hesitation, he rushed to help his partner. I could only hope that I would have performed as heroically as Eric did had I been in that same situation. Eric was a true warrior. The honor guard took four-hour shifts at the hospital, and PSO Matt Elzinga relieved me. The ride back to Kalamazoo is a blur. Once inside my cruiser, I could finally let my emotions run out. I cried the entire 45 minutes back to Kalamazoo. I laughed at Eric out loud, yelled at him, screamed his name, and just remembered my brother. I was emotionally drained, and I felt empty, dead inside. I was a wreck. My shift didn't end when I returned to Kalamazoo. I came back to meet with other Honor Guard members to start the coordination process for Eric's funeral. The murder of PSO Eric Zapata was clearly our darkest days at the department. Yet we continued to do our duties, take our calls, respond to emergencies, and go about our work. Still, it wasn't as if nothing happened. Everyone was depressed and emotionally drained. I cannot speak for my coworkers, but for me, I found the next 2 weeks to be terrible and unforgiving. However, I believe the tragedy brought our department closer together as an agency, a family, and as a community. Coordinating the funeral and sequence of events was by far our honor guard's most challenging duty. This funeral had to be perfect in every way. I feel that in the end, we gave Eric the best final honors and respect he so gallantly deserved. It is my hope that by writing about him in this book, that he will live in all of us forever and will never be forgotten. Officer Eric Zapata was shot and killed after responding to reports of shots fired. Another officer had also responded to the call and approached a man standing on a porch. As the officer asked the man if he had heard any shots, the man suddenly pulled out a gun and exchanged shots with the officer. The subject then ran in between two houses, where he confronted Officer Zapata. More shots were exchanged, and Officer Zapata was struck in the head and chest. The man then committed suicide. Officer Zapata had served with the Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety for 10 years. When a police officer is killed, it's not an agency that loses an officer. It's an entire nation. Chris Cosgriff, ODMP founder.